We think women need to talk more openly about money because money really matters. It shouldn't be embarrassing or confusing. Join the conversation. We'll be discussing a whole range of topics which will help you get comfortable with your finances. Money Matters, brought to you by AJ Bell.
Hello, welcome back to another Money Matters podcast. I'm Laura Suter, and as ever, I am joined by Danny Hewson. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Laura. Hello, everyone. This is a tax year-end special, which might sound dull unless you are a spreadsheet fanatic like Laura, but hopefully it'll be full of tips to get your finances ready for the new financial year and make sure you've wrung every possible opportunity from what's left of this one.
Who doesn't love a spreadsheet, Danny? I refuse to believe anyone thinks they're dull. But don't worry, if you're not that au fait with spreadsheets, we will keep things nice and simple. We've got lots and lots of useful information in this episode, but we're going to break it down into easy chunks so that even the very novice of novices can follow along. And we've drafted in a financial advisor to answer all of your questions. We had loads of brilliant ones come in from Money Matters listeners, but also from those of you who came along to our International Women's Day in-person event in London the other week. Some great questions from there.
Spreadsheets I find intimidating, but you're right. I mean, we've got a real mix of questions that we put to the wonderful Jane Gow, founder and financial advisor from Clearcut Chartered Financial Planners, a company that's really pushed to make their services more accessible for women. So they are right up our alley.
And thanks for everyone who did get in touch with questions. Do keep them coming in because we love to hear from you. And actually, we had lots of questions about pensions. So we're planning a pension special next time with a big focus on how you can find your lost pension pots and then why you might want to combine them all into one bigger pension pot. So definitely email us at hello@ajbellmoneymatters.co.uk. Message us on social media. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, X. We're at AJ Bell Money Matters. And of course, if you sign up to our newsletter via our website, which is ajbellmoneymatters.co.uk, then you will be first to hear about our podcasts, articles, events, and we'll tell you more about an event that we're taking part in Manchester at the end of April at the end of the podcast.
Did you notice that I left all those addresses to you, Laura? Because yeah, that is a mouthful and a half.
Thanks so much.
Let's crack on with our tax year end special. And first, let's deal with the date, because this threw me when I first started looking into it, joined the financial sector, because the new financial year doesn't start on the 1st of April. Oh, no, it actually starts on the 6th, which means that the old one doesn't end until the 5th. So if you're listening to this pod and it's still March or the very beginning of April, you've still got a little bit of time to get yourself ready and to check that you've not missed out on those really valuable allowances. Laura, let's start with a quick checklist for people to run through before midnight on the 5th of April.
Yeah, it's such a random date, isn't it? And I think I've looked into before why it is that date, and there's a historic reason, but I forget it now and it just makes it quite confusing for everyone, doesn't it? But yes, so before the 5th of April, one of the big ones is to look at making sure you've used up all of your tax efficient allowances. So you can save up to £20,000 a year into an ISA, and that means that you don't get taxed on any of the interest or the growth in your investment portfolio. But that allowance resets from the new tax year, and it's use it or lose it. So if you haven't used up some of that allowance, then it will get wiped out, but you get a new allowance on the 6th of April. So that's something to think about. Other thing is that you need to look out, because you could get charged tax on the interest that you're making on your cash savings. So you get an allowance each tax year. If you're a basic rate taxpayer, you can earn up to £1,000 in interest before you start paying tax on that money. If you're a higher rate taxpayer, then you can only earn £500 a year in interest on your cash savings before you start paying tax. And if you're an additional rate taxpayer, you get no tax-free allowance there. So you'll pay tax on any interest that you earn from your cash savings. And so you need to be thinking about how much interest you're earning on your cash savings and whether you want to put that money into an ISA instead, because of course, as I mentioned, that means that you would get that interest tax free. So definitely one to think about before the end of the tax year, because we know that interest, cash interest, has gone up dramatically. And so that means that more people will be hitting those limits. The other thing to think about when we're talking about ISAs is your lifetime ISA. So you can pay £4,000 a year into that if you're eligible for a lifetime ISA. If you're thinking, lifetime ISA, what is that? Go on the AJ Bell Money Matters website. We've got some info on there. It's a really great account if you're saving for your first home, or if you want an additional pot of money to save for retirement other than your pension. But there is some criteria to it, so definitely check. But you can pay £4,000 a year into that. Now, that counts towards that overall £20,000 ISA allowance that I mentioned earlier. So let's break that down. If you put £4,000 into your lifetime ISA, then you would have £16,000 left over for all of your other ISAs. And so that's your cash, your investment ISAs. So you just need to bear in mind that other little quirky allowance if you're using the lifetime ISA. And then the final one to mention, probably when it comes to ISAs, is that you can put money into your child's junior ISA. So these are specific ISA accounts for children, for those under the age of 18. You can have a cash version or you can have an investment version, and you can pay up to £9,000 a year into it. That is totally separate from that £20,000 allowance I talked about earlier. And so it's good to think about whether you want to use that. Now, I mean, that £9,000 limit is huge. Who has £9,000 to put away for their child each year, particularly if you've got more than one child? That would be quite a small group of people. And some people might be thinking that they're not going to get anywhere near any of these allowances. If you think about £20,000 a year for an ISA, lots of people won't have that spare to put away. That's totally normal. But I think even if you're not thinking about the fact that you might hit these annual limits, it's a really good prompt. Tax year end is such a good prompt to think about, you know, organizing your finances, taking stock, refocusing on your savings and investments, looking at how much you've paid into those different accounts. So it's a really great opportunity, I think, to kind of check back in with how you're doing and set some intentions for the next tax year as well.
So everything resets then, Laura, as of the 6th of April. You can start completely fresh. So if you're maybe doing this for the first time, or you feel like you didn't really make the most of last year, what's the best way to plan to make sure that you grab all of those allowances and start the new financial year on a really good footing?
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of thinking about it, isn't it? And I think your first step is probably to look at how you saved and invested over the past year, and then what lessons you can learn from that. So if you're a bit scattergun, then you might want to put a bit more of a plan in place. If you're a bit disappointed that you didn't make the progress over the past year that you thought you might have done, then work out what you could change for next year. And if you look back and you aced it, then just give yourself a pat on the back and carry on doing that for the following year. But I think it's a good way of kind of checking in and thinking, oh, I thought a year ago that I might do X, Y, and Z, and I've achieved some of that, but how can I achieve the rest in the coming year? And then there's some practical bits about that new tax year. So there's some bits that are changing that I thought are worth highlighting. So the first is that the tax-free amounts on what some people call wealth taxes are being cut. So this is dividend tax and capital gains tax. Dividend tax, quite self-explanatory. It's the tax that you get charged on any dividends that you get. So this would be dividends that you get outside of your ISA or pension. Any dividends you receive from your investments inside those wrappers are tax-free. But if you have a general investment account or you hold shares, you know, separately to your ISA and pension, then this might hit you. The tax-free limit on that is being cut. So from the new tax year in April, you can only earn £500 a year from dividends before you're taxed. So that's definitely one to bear in mind, because that limit has come down dramatically over the years. And then the next one is capital gains tax. So this is the tax that you pay on any gains you make on investments, but also second properties. The tax-free amount for this is being cut again. So from the new tax year, it's going to be just £3,000. It's come down hugely from where it was a few years ago. And it means that if you make a gain worth more than £3,000, then you'll be hit with this tax. So definitely one to consider. And when we're thinking about using up some of those ISA allowances, it's thinking about whether shifting some of your investments into an ISA to protect them from those taxes might be a good route. And then I thought I would flag some specific things for parents, because there are a few new things to consider from the start of the new tax year. The first is the extended free hours. I'm doing air quotes around the word free there, because we know that they aren't quite what they say on the tin. But if you have a two-year-old, from April, you can get 15 free hours a week just for term time, so for 38 weeks of the year, in a nursery or a childminder. So even though I've put air quotes around it and I've couched it in the fact that you only get it in term time, that still should cut your nursery bill. It should help. It might not have a dramatic impact on it, but it should really help with those nursery costs. But if you don't apply before April, then you have to wait until the start of the next term, which is September. So you need to get that application in now. If you've got a two-year-old who is turning two before April, then get that application in. Otherwise, you don't get those free hours until September, which would be very frustrating. And also what's frustrating for parents is if your child turns two after the 1st of April, then you won't be eligible until September either. This is an annoying quirk of how the free hours work, which is that you're eligible for the start of the term after your child reaches the eligible age, which, my goodness, that's a lot of jargon. But anyway, I was caught in this by my daughter turning three, being eligible for some free hours, and then me having to wait 3 months for them. I'm still annoyed about it, and it was a while ago now. So just make sure you don't get caught out by that.
And then it's just like school, though, isn't it? Because I remember my daughter was born in the September, and I had a friend, we were pregnant at the same time, and her son was born at the end of August. So her child went to school a full year earlier than mine. So I was still paying all this childcare, and you're like, no.
I'm in exactly the same camp. And yeah, it's tough. It's expensive. Should have pushed her out a couple of weeks earlier. The second thing for parents is to check child benefit. So the threshold at which you start to lose child benefit has actually gone up from April. So people out there who think, child benefit, I earn too much, I'm not eligible for it, think again, because you might now be eligible. So it's gone, that threshold where you start losing child benefit has gone up from £50,000, which is what it is at the moment, up to £60,000. So that means that anyone earning up to £60,000 will now get the full child benefit. And then parents who earn up to £80,000 will still get a portion of it. So the entire thing gets wiped out once you or your partner earning £80,000. We're going to put an article about that and how you can turn that windfall of money into a nice little nest egg for your child on the Money Matters website. So sign up to the newsletter and you'll find out there. But definitely, if some of those bands of salaries that I've talked about relate to you, then definitely check out whether you might be eligible, because it's a decent amount of money, particularly if you've got two or three children. It's a decent amount of money each year that you could claim.
And while we are thinking about a new tax year, it's also worth just doing a bit of a spring clean on your overall investments. Check what stocks and shares you've got in your pensions and ISAs. Are they still working for you? If you've got funds mixed in with those, it's also worth checking to see if they've made any changes to what they've got in them. Because if you're going for diversity, so you want a lot of different investments in your pot, in your basket, and you suddenly find that shares that you hold separately are now also in a fund that you've got, that might just shift things for you in terms of your diversity. So we did have a previous pod with a fund manager. So if you want to know more about putting together a portfolio, that basket of investments, do listen back to that.
Plenty to go on there, but the key is not to get overwhelmed. So you don't have to do everything at once. I think the best thing to do is just come up with a little checklist, tick something off each week, even if it's a really tiny task, and then that will fuel you forward. And remember that everyone is different and our lives change and our finances change with them. So just make sure that you're kind of doing all of those checks as your finances evolve.
Because you're absolutely right, it can be ridiculously overwhelming. You know, you get to the first, not the 1st of April, there you are, you see, 6th of April, and you say, a new tax year, right, I need to put everything in place and find all the paperwork and spend several hours just looking at numbers, and it is just too daunting. So yeah, a little and often is the best thing with most things in life, I think. We know that you've all got questions, which is why you're listening to this pod. But no one, not even Laura with her spreadsheets, has all the answers. We've drafted in a chartered financial advisor. Jane Gow is the founder of Clearcut Financial Planners. She's going to answer the questions that you sent in to us. And thank you so much for them. Now, Jane does make it clear that she's working on very limited information about your individual circumstances. So her answers are useful for guidance only. They're no substitute for personal financial advice, especially if you have complicated finances. And do remember, you can access the government's Money Helper website, which is packed full of free impartial advice. But here is what she had to say. So we've got a whole host of different questions, from the really straightforward to the ridiculously complicated. And I would say that obviously we're just throwing these at you, so you don't know people's individual circumstances. So these are just guidance. This is just sort of off the top of your head stuff to try and give people a little bit of help.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm just trying today, you know, obviously it's going to be a bit of a challenge answering some of the questions with not very much background information. So just trying to give people some pointers and things that they might want to go and read a bit more about, rather than saying this is what you should go and do it now. It's definitely, you know, just some pointers in the right direction.
Brilliant. So we had an in-person event for International Women's Day, and we got a lot of questions there. We've asked you guys on social media, our newsletter subscribers. We've had loads of questions in. Some people have given us their names. Some people have chosen to be anonymous. And I'm going to start one, which seems on the face of it to be really straightforward, but actually it is a question that we get asked a lot. What should you do when you want to invest but you don't have a lot of money?
Gosh, yeah, that's a good one to start on, and it's one we could probably do a whole podcast on its own. So where do you start, you know, when you don't have a lot of money? It's like anything, I think. It's like, you know, when you're doing exercise or anything like that, just you need to start in small amounts and not make the goals too big, maybe break them up a little bit into sort of small goals about what you're trying to achieve, because I think sometimes it can all seem, you know, sort of quite vast. So the sorts of things I'd think about is what you're actually saving for, if it's for sort of long-term savings or short-term savings. And then, you know, if you want to invest, so we talk about investing meaning more than just a short-term savings account in a sort of a longer-term savings account for retirement or longer-term savings, then I'd just start by looking at what you can afford to invest. And there are many different sort of platforms and investment choices that you can have with as little as just a few pounds every month. That you can invest. It doesn't have to be, you know, sort of thousands of pounds.
We've got a really straightforward platform called Doddle, yep. Where it's just £25 a month. Yep. And that might be a great sort of start, just to look and see what is achievable. Yep. And I know with the cost of living at the moment, £25 seems for many people like a huge amount of money, but those smallish amounts can start to generate, you know, from little acorns, big oak trees grow.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think some of them will even let you invest small amounts like that on and not on a regular basis, just here and there when you can afford to invest in them. And yeah, it's, you know, getting used to, you know, the it's like your online banking. It's getting used to and familiar with what it all looks like online and where you can invest. And quite often there's some short tutorials on there about which maybe funds that you might want to buy. And a fund is something that you might be investing a small amount in, but you're investing in a lot of different shares and investments within that fund. So it's probably, again, just picking something that's not an individual share, but maybe a fund, but with small amounts, and then watching it grow. I mean, the only thing I would say is, when I say watching it grow, I wouldn't watch it too much how it grows. Maybe, you know, it's something that you log in once a month and have a look at. and then think about, you know, the amount that you're going to invest in next, or, you know, pay it in on a regular basis. But yeah, you can do this with relatively small amounts.
So our next one is, and this is really timely, if interest rates are going to fall, should I lock my cash away now in a fixed rate account before they do?
Yeah, good question. At the moment, yeah, like you say, interest rates are looking as though they peaked and they're probably likely to come down now. There's still some good rates around, and we've got used to seeing interest rates now for the last 12 months, whereas for the last 5 or 6 years, there'd be no interest. So yeah, you know, probably now is a good time to look at fixed rates. I'd have a look at the term of the fixed rate. So there's 1 year, 3 years, 5 years that you can invest in. I'm also inclined to think about splitting that up. So maybe do a 1 year, do a 3 year, do a 5 year, so that you've got money coming back to you at various periods of time than just thinking, do I put all my money away for 5 years and try to get a rate? But you know, under 12 months at the moment, 12 month fixed rates, I think, are still about 5% or just over. And 3 and 5 years are just under the 5% mark, which compared to a few years ago is super exciting that we're getting, you know, some good rates. I'd also think about the amount you're putting in fixed rates, because, you know, fixed rate, if it's for longer term savings, such as retirement or pensions and things like that, it might be worth looking at other alternatives than just putting savings into fixed rates accounts. So even though they're great rates of interest, I'd be looking at your pots and making sure if that pot that you're saving for in a fixed rate account is for retirement, maybe that will be better off in your pension than putting it in a fixed rate. So there's different trade-offs.
There's one here. I want to invest some money for my child, but should I do that in a junior ISA or just in my own ISA? Because I'm not going to max out my £20,000 allowance for myself. So that's an individual savings account. I think most people know what an ISA is, but individual savings account is to give it its full title.
Yeah, so a junior ISA is a savings for a child. And I would say the main disadvantage really to saving in a junior ISA is that money comes out when they're 18. So, you know, it's whether you feel at 18 that they're ready to you know, have the investment. So it doesn't, you know, we will automatically come out whatever they're doing at age 18. I know my daughter was buying handbags at that age and I'd be a bit worried about it coming out into her hands. But yeah, whereas if you put it into an ISA in your name, if you're saying that you're not going to use your £20,000 allowance, then you have more control. So it might be 21, it might be 25. It might be you want to give them some at age 18 or some of them a little bit later. So I think the answer to the question is all about how much control you want them to have when they're 18. So just to be aware that a junior ISA, you can invest in exactly the same things as you can invest in your ISA, but it's what age you want them to sort of get their hands on the money and, you know, use that.
So what is the most important thing to invest in? This is a question that we got at our International Women's Day event. What is the most important thing? A SIP, a self-invested personal pension, a workplace pension, or an ISA, which we've just been talking about, or a lifetime ISA? And should I be doing stocks and shares or cash is what they're asking?
Gosh, that's another essay question, isn't it?
Getting their money's worth.
So yeah, I think obviously there were several different things that they mentioned in that question about, you know, should it be a workplace pension, a SIP, an ISA, or a LISA, or a lifetime ISA, I think you mentioned. I think the one to start with is the workplace pension. So with a workplace pension, quite often the employer has to pay in on behalf of the employee as well as your contribution. So that's a good place to start with your retirement, with saving, because, you know, if you're putting some money in, then your employer is also putting some money in. You're also getting tax relief on that contribution as well. So anything that's going into your pension, if you're putting £80 in, £100 is going in. And I would say with a pension, you know, if I told you about an investment that was going to give you a guaranteed return of 20% if you're a basic rate taxpayer in the first year, you'd probably think that was a good investment. So anything going into your pension is giving you tax relief, and your employer is also paying into that. A SIP is slightly different. So a SIP is a self-invested personal pension. So it's something that you would probably open up and take out and arrange for yourself, separate to your workplace. But if you put money in that, you'll still get the tax relief, but your employer probably isn't going to pay into it the same way as they would pay into it if it's a workplace pension. And I think the other option that you mentioned was a lifetime ISA, which can also be used for retirement planning. You can only put £4,000 into a lifetime ISA, but if you put £4,000 in it, again, you'll get tax relief. The government will put £1,000 into it as well. So £5,000 goes into it together. You'll only get basic rate taxpayer, basic rate tax relief on it. So if you are a high rate taxpayer, you're probably best looking at the pension options there. And then finally, the ISA. You're not going to get any tax relief for saving into that. So I'd be inclined to be looking at the other pots before that. I'd be looking at the ISA if it was for long-term retirement type savings. But if there is something, you know, that you want to save for, that you want to do on in retirement, it might also be worthwhile using that pot as well. So I think, you know, all the pots have got a place in a financial plan. We love all these different pots that we sort of like filling up, but there's probably an order that you need to use them in.
And a lifetime ISA is also often used for saving for a house. And we had one in. I live in London with my family. I want to save for my first home. I've been saving into my LISA, but nowhere near enough. I've been thinking about saving for a pension instead, but then I won't be able to save for a home. In your opinion, would saving for retirement override saving for a home in the UK? I'm in my 30s.
Gosh, that's a really, really difficult question. And again, it is, you know, it's faced by a lot of young people at the moment weighing up. I mean, it's great that they're thinking about retirement saving as well as saving for a house at the same time. You know, again, I don't think it has to be one or the other. I would suggest that you know, both, they need to be saving into both, maybe with a little bit more focus on the saving for the house in the short term, but not ignoring the pension pot. Because I go back to the comment about there may be a workplace pension in the background, the employer is paying into that as well. So, you know, there should be some contributions going into the pension, and I wouldn't be giving up on that. But yeah, it's really difficult, and you can save in a LISA, a lifetime ISA, as I've said, £4,000 a year. If that's being maximised out, then you could also save in a normal ISA for a deposit for a house as well, in a sort of cash ISA or something like that. So I don't think it should be, you know, one or the other. I think, you know, trying to fill up these different pots with different priorities at different times in your life. There's never a great time, as you probably know, Danny, to start thinking about your pension, because the next financial challenge comes its way. So I would always have pensions in the back of your mind. Keep putting something into it. You know, don't ever ignore it completely. But there might be times in your life that, you know, small amounts go in and large amounts go in.
And I guess if you don't buy a house, and if you aren't able to clear your mortgage by the time you take your pension, then that pension is going to have to cover housing costs.
Well, that's right. Yeah, you know, we're going to have bills right the way through retirement, and state pensions are increasing in age that, you know, that you can get your state pension. So we're going to be working that bit longer. Yeah, but it... you know, there's some research that came out from the Pension Savings Lifetime Association quite recently that gave indications which were really useful, I think, for people to look at, that said, you know, if you want a basic lifestyle in retirement, or if you want something that's a bit more comfortable, or you want a very nice lifestyle in retirement, it gave you an idea of, you know, what that would cost for single and joint households. And I think it's worthwhile looking at that now. And when we sort of talk about saving into your pension, there might be times in your life where you're just kind of saving for, well, I just need something to get me by in retirement, to actually maybe later on in life when you can put some more money into pensions, that you're moving up that scale there. But that's a really useful guide. The bills don't go away when you retire, absolutely right. They still, they hopefully the mortgage is paid off, but you know, you've still got all those other expenses. So it really is important. And this basics, the sort of the state pension, although on it, you know, it isn't a bad thing if it sits with other things. On its own, it's not enough. But if it sits with some pension savings that you've saved all your life, that will sit on top of the state pension. But again, it's asking the question, do you want to work till, you know, 67 at the moment? And the chances are that's going to rise, you know, to what they're talking about at the moment, early 70s.
Here's a good one. As we're talking about pensions, how do I start investing in a pension because I don't have one?
I think it's very similar to the question that you asked about, you know, how do I start saving? How do I start investing? It's starting with something. Something's better than nothing. It's like the whole exercise thing that, you know, we like to use as an analogy. Some exercise is probably better than no exercise. But I think the first place to go to is your workplace pension. You know, to that all workplaces now, since, you know, sort of quite some time now have had to pay into pensions on behalf of employees. So to go and have a look at that, maybe look a little bit under the bonnet, you know, what is it? How much is going into it? An employer has to put 3% of your earnings into your pension. So it's, you know, it's starting with that workplace pension and having a look at that. And some employers are more generous than others. There's some really good employers out there that will also, on top of that, you know, some match your contribution, which again is free money. So, you know, if you're if they're prepared to pay, say, match 5% and you put 5% in, I mean, that's like a 5% pay rise. It's going into your pension. And again, small amounts going in. I always think, you know, even if it's an extra £50 a month, you know, by the time you take tax and national insurance off, it's probably only costing you about £30 a month. You know, people can get used to that after a few months. And then if you keep saying, well, every year, you know, I'm going to increase it a bit, even if it's by £10, over a period of time, you stop noticing that money. I know what I'm like. Somebody takes it off me before I've even been paid. I don't notice it quite the same as if it's going out of my bank account. So, you know, going back to the question, you know, small amounts is better than nothing at all.
So if they don't have a workplace pension, how would they then look at starting a pension, maybe a self-invested personal pension?
So, yeah, again, there's lots of online information about how you can start a pension. And like you say, there's the AJ Bell have got their own platform that you can go and quite easily online and doddle, save into the pension. I mean, the only thing you've got to be aware of is any money you put into the pension, you can't get back out. So it's not emergency savings or anything like that. But you can do that yourself and just be aware of, like I say, anything you put in, you can't kind of, with other investments, you can take it back out if you need it for an emergency. It's going away now until your retirement age. But that sometimes is also a good thing because it means that you can't get it back out and spend it. So it's a kind of, you know, it's a one-way gate as such. But yes, small amounts, I think, you know, £30-£50 a month, I think you mentioned before, £25 a month, you know, start there and just work. I'm a bit of a spreadsheet fanatic, as most people probably know. You know, look at a spreadsheet with it on over a couple of years, and if you increase it by £25 every month, every year, it's amazing how quickly those contributions build up. The problem is sometimes people just leave it too long before they start and they get to 40 and think I haven't even started. And then the mountain just seems to get bigger and bigger. So if you can start young, I'm always going on to my children about pensions and things like that. So
got one here from Sally. Yeah. She says she's changing jobs. Should she freeze that pension or transfer it into the new workplace pension?
Well, it's good to know she's got the option to do both. So, and it would just be worth exploring, you know, things like what's the cost of her existing scheme? Sorry, did she say which scheme she's in or just
no? No.
It's worthwhile looking at the cost of her existing scheme. And one thing to look at is the cost of the new scheme. It's, you know, it's quite nice to tidy pensions up. I think if we've got fragmented employment, we can move along life with what could be 7 or 8 different pension schemes, which are hard to keep on track of. So sometimes when, you know, Sally's moving jobs, she might want to change it and move it with her. So that is an option. I think it's also, you know, sort of worth bearing in mind as well as looking at the costs and comparing the costs of the two different schemes, how much they're paying for them. It's not always the best thing to do to merge them all together, because it might just give you some flexibility in retirement. I think there's something to be said at the moment about how we're probably all going to retire. I think if we go back a generation, some people retired on a certain day and that was it. They stopped work. I think these days more and more people are phasing into retirement. They might be working part time. They might be changing careers. And sometimes having pensions in different pots might mean that you could supplement your part time working in later life by having the different pots. So there's a lot to think about in, should I move it from one pension to another? It's individual circumstances, and it's not really a yes or no answer. It depends.
Here's one that's a bit more complicated.
Great.
From Ruth. She says, I'm 50. I've been paying into a teacher's pension for 20 years. Am I still able to claim a lump sum at 55?
So she can apply to the teacher's pension scheme to take a pension early. I think she just needs to be a little bit careful about her age at the moment, because there is some changes to the minimum pension age coming up quite quickly. This legislation's been around for a while, and we've all been talking about the changes in retirement age in 2028, thinking it's a long time off, but it's only 4 years off. And the pension minimum pension age is moving from age 55 to age 57. So I think those people that are around, you know, early 50s are now going to be impacted by this 57. So, you know, yes, at the moment you can take it at age 55. The teacher's pension's got a really good website. I've looked at it myself on several occasions to try and find answers to questions. So I'm sure if she has a look at the teacher's pension website, that'll give her a clear indication as to whether she's going to be impacted by these changes, which I suspect she probably is at 57.
Here's one in a sort of similar vein from Laura. Should I combine my old workplace pension, which was with the Housing Association, into my NHS one?
Again, I think it's a similar response to the last one, but there's less options around from moving it from the Housing Association to the NHS. Again, I'm pretty sure with those two schemes that you can transfer them. I think there's some windows. I've got a feeling, and it might be worth checking the NHS website, that she's got to do that within her first 12 months of being employed by the National Health. It's not a yes or no answer. It's another one that depends on her own personal circumstances. You know, when Laura wants to retire, because there are several schemes now within the NHS, and the latest scheme is that the retirement age is state pension age. It might be she's moving from a local authority scheme or a housing association scheme that has got a different retirement age. So she just needs to be wary of what retirement age is both those schemes are. You know, they're both complex pension schemes and they've both got good websites that they can have a look at. Again, if I don't know if Laura said how long she'd worked for the Housing Association in her question. No, but if she's worked there for quite a long period of time, then it might be worthwhile getting paid for some financial advice. She's only been there a couple of years. You know, she's probably going to have to try and fathom it out from the information that she can see on both websites. And Money Helper is a good website as well, which I think you've mentioned.
Here's one from Julia. High prices over the last couple of years meant I've eaten into quite a bit of my pension pot. I've been thinking about equity release. What do I need to consider before I go down this route?
So she's presumably there is a pension pot that she's got that she's saying that she's spent. So this will be a defined contribution type pot for a pension that she's just drawing from. So it's not a guaranteed amount that she'll be receiving every month. And, you know, with increases, as you say, with cost of living and things like that, people are drawing more and more out of their pensions. So they're decreasing quite quickly the pot, which is quite worrying. And it's quite worrying as you get older. People tend to get more anxious about money as they get older. So there's a couple of things. Is the first one is to sit down and really do a good expenditure questionnaire, as we would call it. You know, how much are you spending? What's essential expenditure? And what's what we call lifestyle expenditure? So I talk about essential expenditure being what your COVID expenditure. So what did you used to spend in COVID when we were all sort of stuck at home? Bills we needed to eat, but probably all a lot of the nice things that we were spending money on, not quite the same. So have a look at expenditure, and it's always good for that essential expenditure to be covered by some sort of guaranteed income. So I don't know what she might have left in the pot, but it might be worthwhile looking at an annuity with what's left. So an annuity is a guaranteed income for life. And as interest rates are quite high at the moment, then it's not a bad time to buy an annuity, because annuity rates are quite good. And that might help cover the guaranteed levels of income that she needs in retirement. But if all that's exhausted and the pension pot has literally run out and it's like the only thing I've got is the value of my house, then equity release is an option. You know, it's quite often a suitable option if there's no family and you've got nobody to leave your house to, and you think, right, I've spent the pension pot, I'm now going to spend the equity in you know, in my property. But I would say, in terms of pointers, I wouldn't do an equity release until the pension pot is pretty much run out, because it's an expensive option to do, and you've got what we call compound interest on the equity release. So the as you borrow money on the value of your house, that the amount you've taken out is increasing quite quickly. And I'd talk to family about it, see what they think, see if there's any other alternatives. And if she's thinking about that, it's worthwhile paying to go to get some advice on it. Sorry, quite a long-winded answer there, but there's lots of things to consider. So I'm just trying to put a few pointers in place to sort of say, look at an annuity to see if that's a solution before you move to equity release.
Here's one from Karen. I want to transfer my shares from my dealing account into my SIP, self-invested personal pension, but I don't want to lose the value of those shares. Is it best to do this? Will I still have to pay capital gains tax on each stock I transfer?
This is the time of year that people are looking to do this. I mean, it's leaving it quite late in the day because we're coming up to the end of the tax year, but there's still a couple of weeks left to make the most of those allowances that you can make the most of. So, if you want to put money in a SIP and you've got a dealing account, which is what we call an unwrapped investment, so it's got no particular tax advantages to it, you will need to encash those shares to be able to do that, and then you'll be able to contribute them to the SIP, the self-invested personal pension. So the things to consider is there may be capital gains tax. The capital gains tax allowance of this year is £6,000, so depending on how much is being encashed, you might have to pay capital gains tax on that if it's more than £6,000 worth of gain, which reduces to £3,000 next tax year. There may be some transaction costs from selling and putting it in the SIP, and there may be like a gap in there. So if you've got shares in one particular company and then you're going to buy them again in the SIP, once it's gone into the SIP, there may be a couple of days between those two transactions. So you're probably not going to get the exact share price that you bought and sold at. But in essence, it can be done. And when you make that contribution to your SIP, what you might find, depending on how that contribution's made, is that you're going to get tax relief as well. So you're going to get some tax back. So, you know, in general terms, it's a good thing to move it from a dealing account into a SIP, but you just need to be aware of in the main, those transaction costs, the time out of the market in doing the transactions, and any capital gains tax that might need to be payable on the transaction.
You'll be glad to know we're coming to the end of our questions. They've been incredibly varied. Yeah. Joe says, are AVCs worth paying into? I pay into one through work that is extra to my local authority pension.
So AVCs are additional voluntary contributions. So they're usually alongside a sort of final salary type pension that she's got. What did Joe say? Which pension did she say? Local authority, was it?
Local authority.
So she's got a local authority pension, and she can pay in additional voluntary contributions, which are just pension contributions she's paying into the scheme. So anything I would say that's going into a pension is a good thing. So yes, it's good that she's paying extra contributions on top into the pension. And this might give her a little bit more flexibility in retirement. So depending what the AVCs do, the reason for paying in the AVCs, it might be that you're trying to make up some lost years that where you didn't work or didn't have a pension scheme. It may be for some people, they want to use the AVCs to bring down the scheme retirement age. So the local authority might have a retirement age, a state pension age, and you want to retire a bit earlier. So it's good to pay into AVCs to try to achieve that. And, you know, it also might mean that you could get potentially a sort of higher lump sum from the main scheme, because the AVCs can be used to increase the lump sum. So it's definitely a good thing for Joe to think about doing, paying into AVCs.
And our last one, my company only lets us invest in ETFs, not stocks, for personal trading. How do I navigate this? I suppose the first thing, what's an ETF?
So an ETF is an exchange traded fund. It's usually a very low cost fund. So that's it's a bit of industry jargon that we use for a sort of a low cost fund. So the employer is obviously setting up a low cost pension scheme, which is a good thing that they've looked into the how much the pension scheme is going to cost. There should still be a wide range of funds even within ETFs, so it's worthwhile looking at what ETF funds are available, what they're invested in, and trying to, you know, if she's got to self-select, again, there's usually a default option that the workplace pension scheme will be putting her in, is looking for something that's very widely diversified and investing in lots of different things all over the world.
Jane, thank you so much for talking to us, for dealing with the myriad of questions which came in from our brilliant podcast listeners. Thank you for your questions, and maybe we'll get you to come back on and answer some more sometime.
Thanks, Danny. I'd love to.
Jane Gow from Clearcut Financial Planners there, and thanks so much to her for taking time to answer all of your questions, which I think covered a really good range of topics. And as Danny said earlier, Jane's answer shouldn't be taken as personal finance advice, because she's working on some quite limited information that we gave her or that you guys provided. So if you have more questions about your specific circumstances, then either talk to a financial advisor or access the government's Money Helper website, which has loads of help and support on there. Now, Danny, I think you've got a confession to make, haven't you?
I do. My confession is that I forgot to ask Jane for a confession, but my excuse is that I wanted to use Jane's time to answer all of your questions. So hopefully that has been really informative. And if we do get more questions over the next months, we will get her to pop back and do it again.
But for now, that is everything for this podcast. Next time, we'll be digging into pensions and when and how to combine all of those pension pots that you might have. We've got the lovely Rachel Vey, who is AJ Bell's head of public policy and our resident pension guru, coming on to talk about that. And Rachel is also going to join us at our next in-person event. And she appeared at our last in-person event. We're really squeezing everything out of Rachel.
We're spoiled, but we are taking the Finance Stand at the Anything Is Possible conference in Manchester on Saturday, the 27th of April. We would love to see some of you there. We'll have more information on our website, newsletter, and on social media. Laura gave you all those addresses. I'm going to give you just AJ Bell Money Matters. Look out for those on social media. Keep your eyes peeled. It is going to be a fantastic event. Until next time, though, thanks so much for listening.
Before you go, please remember this podcast is for educational purposes, and the views expressed don't necessarily reflect those of AJ Bell. The podcast isn't telling you if a certain investment is suitable or not. Don't forget that the value of investments can change, and you can lose money as well as make it. It's also important to remember that how you're taxed will depend on your individual circumstances, and rules can change. The way an investment performed in the past may not be the same as how it behaves in the future. If you want help, go see a qualified financial advisor.